action continues on page 15.
We have already seen a beauty queen kidnapped and an indoor blizzard. Only one man could keep a cool that cool, while the dynamic duo dynamite a door. The Iceman cometh with a delivery of what? Green ice? Bribe money? Anyway, that's what the papers seem to feel. But Bruce Wayne still had the social responsibilities of any average millionaire. So there was a surprise guest at his garden reception. Several surprising guests, in fact. And a freezing finale to the affair. So back to the capes and cowls. And a stop at the Frosty Freezies factory, where Robin tangled with a freeze gun. And the dynamic duo found themselves with a choice of very frosty flavors. Cooled, framed, and frozen. Frosty Freezies instead of crime fighters. What now? What next?
For both of you. Although it would warm my frigid heart to see you two turn into frosty freezies, I must make a cold exit to check on Miss Iceland.
You'll never get away with this!
Save your strength, dynamic duo. I want my frozen treats to look cool, calm, and collected.
You frigid fiend!
Frigid fiend. Wild. Ta-ta, Batman.
Good, he's gone.
What good is that to us, Batman?
Steady, old chum. We're not iced over yet.
But I'm almost frozen solid.
If I only have time enough to reach my anti-freeze unit in the Bat Utility Belt.
After this, I don't think I'll ever take time for granted again.
Robin, you've hit on it.
What, time?
No, Robin, a grant.
A grant? I don't get it, Batman.
We may gain the time we need by mentioning our sponsor or the grant they provide.
A grant? Go ahead, try it, Batman. We've got nothing to lose.
Mystery Playhouse is sponsored by...
Said quote, Mystery Playhouse is sponsored by Comics and Comics Toys and Games at 405 California Avenue, unquote. We now return you to the music of Raymond Raquello, playing for you...
Those creatures know what that means, what anything means. Wait a minute, something's happening.
Ladies and gentlemen, due to circumstances beyond our control, we are unable to continue the broadcast.
Now here's another bulletin from Washington, D.C.
Martial law prevails throughout... Ladies and gentlemen, I have a grave announcement to make.
So that we may confront this destructive adversary.
Everything wiped out. This may be the last broadcast. We'll stay here to the end.
There is nothing wrong with your radio. Do not attempt to change the station. We are controlling the transmission. We control the volume.
We can change the tone to a fuzzy bass.
Or focus it to a tinny treble.
We can speed things up so fast you can hardly understand what's being said.
Or we can make things so slow you don't care.
We control the content. We can make it boring.
Mystery Playhouse.
Or moronic.
90.1.
We can even make it repetitive.
Mystery Playhouse.
Or moronic.
90.1.
We can even make it repetitive. It's our show. We can do anything we want because this is
Mystery Playhouse 90.1.
It's a bright midsummer day in Metropolis, and there's not much news fit to televise at Galaxy Communications, where, in his office, Clark Kent is monitoring the 12 o'clock news.
Clear and sunny at 12 noon in downtown Metropolis. It's 92 degrees and getting hotter.
Lois Lane, ace reporter for Galaxy Communications, opens Clark's door and looks in.
Clark, I'm off for lunch.
Enjoy it, Lois. I think I'm going to take a nap.
Lois Lane leaves, and Clark lies back in his chair, only to be rudely awakened by...
Galaxy, Clark Kent here.
Dr. Tripper speaking of the Void Observatory.
Yes, Dr. Tripper. What can I do for you?
Well, it seems, Mr. Kent, my telescope is picking up a strange sort of, well, what I can only describe as an electrical storm, which is approaching the Earth rapidly. I thought the news media should be advised.
Clark immediately sends for Jimmy Olsen, investigative reporter for the Daily Planet.
Listen, Jimmy, take a ride out to Void Observatory and check out what's happening and let me know immediately. I'll be here.
Meanwhile, Perry White, editor of the Daily Planet, is hosting a luncheon in honor of Superman, which is being held on the 20th floor of the 50-floor Majestic Hotel. But Superman has not yet appeared to take his place of honor. As Jimmy disappears out the door, Clark Kent steps into the closet in his office.
I thought nothing would ever come up to get Lois and Jimmy out of here so I could get to that lunch on time.
And as Clark Kent, now Superman, whizzes out his office window to attend the lunch in his honor, Jimmy Olsen drives rapidly along a winding mountain road on his way to Void Observatory, site of the most powerful telescope in the world.
Wouldn't you know, I'd have to be the one to drive all the way out here in this heat.
Whew!
It must be 100 degrees in the shade and no rain in sight.
Jimmy's car pulls up to Void Observatory. He walks up to the lab, and as Jimmy waits for the door of the Void Observatory to open, he happens to glance up at the sky, where he notices a small dark cloud way, way up, far above the highest mountaintop.
Looks like storm clouds are gathering.
The immense door finally opens, and Dr. Tripper beckons Jimmy inside.
You must be from the news media. Now, your credentials, please.
Investigative reporter, Galaxy Communications.
Well, come in then. Come in. Come on.
Jimmy steps inside the room and is immediately taken aback by the sight of the gigantic telescope which occupies the whole observatory.
Wow, Doctor. That thing's a monster. You ought to be able to see a storm coming up a million miles away.
Yes, we can. And there is a storm coming up. But I've never sighted anything like this one before. Here, let me explain this.
Meanwhile, back in Metropolis, Lois Lane sits at the counter of the Greenall drugstore where she's finishing her lunch. A pineapple ice cream soda. And at the Majestic...
And so, Superman... Although absolutely nothing has happened to disturb the citizens of Metropolis for some time now, and no one has needed your services, we want you to know we greatly appreciate all that you've done for us in the past.
As Perry presents Superman with a plaque from the Daily Planet, one of the guests looks out the window.
Hey, what's that?
What's going on here?
It's hailing!
It's hailing silver bullets!
As the luncheon guests mill around the room, holes appear in the ceiling. And silver bullets streak through the room to the floor below. Panic!
Help! Superman! Help!
Help!
now. I'd better go pick up Lois at Galaxy and get out to Void Observatory fast.
At the same time, caught outside in the street on her way back to work, Lois Lane dodges silver bullets. She runs toward the empty Galaxy offices and rushes into Clark Kent's office.
Clark!
Where she finds only a television set going.
Reports from Moscow indicate a catastrophe has occurred. Since 6 o'clock this morning, we haven't heard a word. SOS, SOS, alien creatures are landing. Alien creatures are landing.
Lois stands, paralyzed, before the television set. Superman zooms through the window and comes to a screeching halt beside her.
Lois!
Superman! What is it? What's happening?
I don't know, Lois, but I have a hunch that Void Observatory is the place to find out. Let's go.
But Superman, where's Clark? I left him right here at his desk.
We'll have to look for Clark later. No time now.
And Superman and Lois are on their way to the observatory, where...
So you see, Jimmy, we have been in constant radio communication with particles of what seemed to be an electrical storm. But we have had no way of interpreting the signals we've been receiving. Now, our next step...
Wait a minute, Dr. Tripper. Look, it's raining silver bullets. Oh, what's going on? They seem to be evaporating everything in their path.
Oh, good grief. I'm sure that... Well, I hope they're friendly.
Superman and Lois Lane appear through the open roof of the observatory and drop to the floor beside Jimmy and Dr. Tripper.
Superman, Superman, thank goodness you've come. But what are we going to do? I'm sure these alien creatures are friendly, but they're unwittingly destroying us, and we have no way of communicating with them.
Superman, you've got to do something.
If we can't talk to them, then we must communicate without words. ESP, thought transference. It's the only way. Everyone, concentrate.
With all the superhuman power at his disposal, Superman sets his great mind in gear to send out a message to these alien creatures who, in landing on the planet Earth, can only, albeit unintentionally, destroy it. Haltingly, Superman speaks.
They say they've had to leave their planet Zoink. Because it has become uninhabitable. They say that the planet Earth is a good place for them.
Once again, Superman focuses his mind power on the incredible problem of communicating with creatures who speak no language known to man.
Help me, everyone. Help me to explain.
And the birds, the trees, the earth people, the fish, the flowers cry out.
To each it's all. To all it's space. Give the world back to the world. Please, friends, give the world back to the world.
Alien creatures, you will destroy our life on the planet Earth if you land. Alien creatures, you are destroying us.
Silence.
Superman, they've stopped falling. Look, they're hovering just off the ground. They don't look like silver bullets. They're like beautiful silver hummingbirds. Oh, Superman, where will they go if they can't stay here?
Yes, Lois, that's what they're saying, too.
His incredible vision, already a trillion times sharper than that of any ordinary being, Superman steps up beside the giant Void telescope, and with no need of the aid of the most powerful telescope known to man, Superman gazes farther out into the universe than any human has ever dared or even tried to see.
Yes. Aha. There it is. A planet in the exact same orbital relationship to its sun as Zoink and the Earth are to their suns, but in an entirely different solar system, of course, from ours and theirs. Our radio waves have confused these little creatures and thrown them off their course.
Once again, Superman concentrates. Like a laser, his mind beams the exact course they must take to the silver creatures who wait, shivering, just a foot above the Earth's surface. Then, like a plague of locusts, the alien creatures rise up, up into the sky, up until they become, once again, a tiny, tiny dark cloud above the highest mountaintop, and then, finally, can be seen no more.
You did it, Superman. You saved us. And you saved them, too.
Once again, we have you to thank, Superman, for saving the world from total destruction.
Oh, my goodness. Clark, we've got to get back to Metropolis and find him.
All right, Lois. You drive back with Jimmy. I'll scout around and see if I can catch sight of him.
Back at Galaxy Communications a few hours later.
Clark, thank goodness you're all right. I was so worried. Where have you been?
Well, actually, Lois, I was under the desk when you and Superman were here, but I was too terrified of getting hit by a silver bullet to come out and let you know I was here. What happened?
I sure wish it would rain.
Spider-Man! Freak! Public menace! Sure, you've read many stories about many different magazine heroes, but there's never been a story like this one, because there's never been a hero like Spider-Man. Page 2.
Our scene is the bedroom of Peter Parker, the teenage student whom many consider to be a shy bookworm. But oh, if they only knew.
Uncle Ben is dead. And all because I was too late to save him. My Spider-Man costume. I wish there were no such thing. It all started when I was bitten by a radioactive spider.
Ouch!
And I found myself possessed of a spider's powers. So I designed a costume to go into show business and cash in. But while I was busy showing off, an armed burglar fired one fatal shot at Uncle Ben when he was surprised robbing our house. As soon as I learned what had happened, I sped through the city via my spider's web, lusting for vengeance.
He won't escape, Spider-Man.
And I soon caught the killer and turned him over to the police.
James Human.
And now Uncle Ben is gone, and Aunt May and I are alone. And what's worse, without Uncle Ben, we've no money to pay our bills.
Please give me a little more time. I'll pay the rent next week if you'll only wait.
And so?
Aunt May, there's only one thing to do. I've got to quit school and get a job.
No, Peter, you mustn't. Your uncle always dreamed of you being a scientist someday. You must continue your studies.
I've got to help Aunt May somehow. Wait. With my powers as Spider-Man, I can do anything. I can go anywhere. No one, nothing can stop me. Any amount of money could be mine just for the taking. But no. What am I thinking of? I'm no criminal. I'm not a thief. Besides, if I were ever arrested and imprisoned, it would break Aunt May's heart. No, there's only one other way. I've got to perform again. I've got to bring my Spider-Man act before the public once more. I'll call a booking agent tonight.
A few days later, at school...
Hey, gang, look! Spider-Man's going to put on a show at the town hall tonight.
And the admission's only a dollar.
Let's all go.
Well, count me out, kids. I can't make it.
Well, we might have known he'd rather study.
Oh, who needs that walking bookworm anyway?
It'd be more fun without him.
Page 4.
That night, as the audience is amazed by Spider-Man's prowess, none suspect the real reason that Peter Parker couldn't be in the audience.
I couldn't very well be doing this act and sitting in the audience also.
Finally, after the show...
It's time to pay you, Spider-Man, but I can't give you cash. Got to give you a check so there's a record for taxes. What name should I write the check out to?
Name? I can't tell you my real name. No one must know my identity. Just make out the check to Spider-Man.
Okay, you're the boss. But you'll have a mighty tough time cashing it.
A tough time cashing it, eh? Well, we'll just see about that. I'd like to cash this check.
I'll have to see some identification.
What about my costume?
Don't be silly. Anyone can wear a costume. You have a social security card or a driver's license in the name of Spider-Man?
No, I don't.
But as Spider-Man finds that he cannot cash his desperately needed check, just across town, a man at a typewriter is making still more trouble for him.
When I'm through with this article, Spider-Man will be run out of town.
And the next night...
Might as well go on back where you came from, Spider-Man. There'll be no show tonight, or any night.
What? Why? What happened?
This happened. Look at this editorial. The paper has everyone so steamed up, they'll probably toss you in jail if you show your face.
But why? What have they got against me? What have I done?
The headline reads, Spider-Man, menace, but not satisfied with merely writing editorials. J. Jonah Jameson, publisher of the powerful Daily Bugle, delivers lectures all over town.
We cannot allow that masked menace to take the law into his own hands. He is a bad influence on our youngsters. Children may try to imitate his fantastic feats. Think what would happen if they make a hero out of this lawless, inhuman monster. We must not permit it. I say that Spider-Man must be outlawed. There is no place for such a dangerous creature in our fair city. The youth of this nation must learn to respect real heroes. Men such as my son, John Jameson, the test pilot. Not selfish freaks such as Spider-Man, a masked menace who refuses to even let us know his true identity.
I don't get it. How do other superhuman guys like the Fantastic Four and the Ant-Man get away with it? Nobody bothers them. And they always seem to make enough dough.
I don't even believe that there is a Spider-Man. It's all a publicity stunt.
Page 6.
Well, if I can't make a living as Spider-Man, the only other thing to do is find a part-time job. I'll take a look through the want ads.
But again, Peter Parker meets with frustration.
Sorry, Sonny. I ain't looking for a school kid. The job I advertised is for a man.
But...
X-Tree John Jameson about to orbit Earth in rocket!
Say, that looks like... It is! It's Aunt May. I wonder where she's going. Oh, no. She's pawning her jewelry. She must be desperate for money. But she doesn't want me to know. She doesn't want to worry me. For me. She's doing it all for me. And there's no way I can repay her. No way I can help her. I can't even find a job.
X-Tree John Jameson, son of the publisher of the Daily Bugle, about to orbit Earth. X-Tree!
It's all his fault. Because of him, I can't perform in public as a Spider-Man. But I can't give up. I've got to earn some money somehow. I can't let Aunt May down. Even if it means the Spider-Man will again stalk the city by night.
Spider-Man Part 2.
Next day, having nothing better to do, Peter Parker finds himself among the spectators, anxiously awaiting the orbit flight of John Jameson.
It sure must take a lot of courage to go up in one of those babies.
I'll bet even Spider-Man would think twice before volunteering for this ride, huh?
I suppose so.
15 minutes to blast off. All unauthorized personnel, clear the field.
This is it, John. Make your country proud of you, son. As proud as I, your father, am today.
I'll do my best, Dad. I promise.
Good luck to you, boy.
Minutes later, the capsule with John Jameson inside is set in orbit by a perfect launch. Then disaster strikes. A small section of the forward guidance package breaks loose from the capsule and falls into space. Without this essential guidance unit, the capsule goes into an erratic orbit, completely out of control.
Something's wrong. I can't control her. This flashing red light, it can mean only one thing. I've lost the heart of the guidance device. There's no way to direct the capsule now.
Meanwhile, miles away...
What is it? What went wrong? Capsule is out of control, sir. Component 24-3B has broken loose, condition red.
What's that? Without the missing part, he will continue to go into lower and lower orbit until he crashes to Earth.
Gentlemen, we haven't much time. We must find some way to save John Jameson's life, even though the capsule is doomed.
Acting with desperate speed... The space technicians attempt to drop a steel net to catch the capsule, but with no success.
A complete miss. We've got to find a better way.
While unsuspected by all, a better way does exist. In the form of Peter Parker, who has observed the entire dramatic event.
There's only one person who can save John Jameson.
And that is Spider-Man. I've got to reach the Missile Control Center the fastest way. The way that only Spider-Man can take. Made it! And now?
We have a spare 24-3B guidance unit, but there's no way to get it to Jameson in time.
You're wrong. There is a way.
Spider-Man!
Let me have the missing unit. I'll get it to the capsule somehow.
Very well. We have nothing to lose. There is no way we can do it.
Spider-Man, bah! He's just a publicity-seeking phony. He's trying to grab a headline. What can he do?
Instead of flapping your lips, mister, just watch and see what I can do.
Wait!
Page 10.
The capsule is getting lower every second. I've got to reach a jet fast.
Arriving at a nearby field, Spider-Man's amazing web shoots out, engulfing the guard's gun hand before the sentry can fire.
Halt! Identify yourself!
No time for that now.
Within seconds, the mighty costumed figure has commandeered a plane and a pilot as they take to the air.
I'll probably be grounded forever for doing this, Spider-Man, but I got a hunch that if anyone can save that poor Joker, you're the guy. Here comes the capsule now, but we can never catch it.
We don't have to catch it.
Wait. What are you going to do?
I've got to hitch a ride on that thing as it passes by. This will be my first and last chance. If it doesn't work, look out below. Here goes. I hit it. Mustn't let go. I've got to pull myself up, fighting against all this wind resistance. Even my strength can just barely do it. There, I reached it. But now, the capsule is losing altitude dangerously. Can I attach the missing unit in time?
Page 12. Spider-Man, Part 3.
What a lucky break. It fit in place as smooth as silk.
And within the capsule.
Capsule under manual control again. We'll eject, shoot, and land immediately.
He's safe. I did it.
Spider-Man succeeded. The capsule is about to land.
My boy, he's safe.
This is as good a time as any for me to get off. I'll bet I'm the only living person who ever had a ride like that before. I'd better make myself scarce now. I'd just be embarrassed if everyone wants to congratulate me and make a big fuss about what I've done.
Anyway, from now on, I guess I shouldn't have any trouble about performing in public. I'll bet even Mr. Jameson himself would hire me.
But when he reads the next edition of the newspaper, Peter Parker is astounded to see...
Oh, no. It can't be. It isn't possible. Why? Why?
The headline reads, "This newspaper demands that Spider-Man be arrested and prosecuted." Editorial by J. Jonah Jameson.
Page 14.
It was all a plot by Spider-Man to steal the spotlight from my son. I accuse Spider-Man himself of sabotaging the capsule so that the guidance unit would fall off. Spider-Man unlawfully broke into a military base and commandeered a plane by force. Then, by means of a grandstand play, he tried to make a hero of himself. But he caused an important missile test to fail and set our space program back by many weeks. I repeat, Spider-Man is a menace to America.
Unfortunately, if something is shouted loud enough, there are always those who will believe it.
They fear me more than ever now.
Spider-Man ought to be run out of the country.
And how?
And finally, under pressure of the angry newspaper man's continual barrage, the headline reads, "Wanted. Caution. He is dangerous. Report him to the nearest FBI office. Spider-Man. Reward for his capture."
Oh, dear. I certainly hope they find that horrible Spider-Man and lock him up before he can do any harm.
What do I do now? How can I prove I'm not dangerous? How can I convince people that I wasn't responsible for the failure of that capsule? Everything I do as Spider-Man seems to turn out wrong. What good is my fantastic power if I cannot use it? Or must I be forced to become what they accuse me of being? Must I really become a menace? Perhaps that is the only course left for me.
And so, a lonely boy sits and broods with the fate of society at stake. What will his decision be? What will Spider-Man do next? Only time will tell.
The end.
On the sixth floor of the United Nations Secretariat building in New York are probably the busiest people in the entire matchbox-shaped structure. The reporters who tell the world of the international organization's affairs.
I don't know, Fred. There's something going on upstairs. Those troubleshooter types don't want to tell us about.
I know. That astronomer who discovered the spectacular meteor shower headed past Earth had an appointment with Morgan Tracy and Diana Prince of the Crisis Bureau this morning. Since then, there hasn't been a public word from any government official anywhere. That's all I know.
That's all anybody knows. It's pretty spooky if you ask me.
But two people who do know are Morgan Tracy of the Crisis Bureau and Diana Prince, alias Wonder Woman.
There's no indication at all that it's an invasion. These men running the world's governments are afraid of anything unknown. They'd be afraid of their shadows if they weren't attached to them.
Well, this is no laughing matter, Diana. What we thought were meteors are actually spaceships on a direct course for Washington, D.C. All they've got to do is say boo, and the balance of peace around the world could topple for fear of them.
Fear, that's the word. Not a love of peace, not need for security. It's blind fear that rules these...
Hello, Tracy here. He has. Then the others will follow immediately. Thanks.
Well, what is it?
It's out of our hands now. The ships have entered the atmosphere, and the President of the United States has authorized an anti-missile barrage to stop them. The Soviet Union and other nuclear powers will probably back up the American defense with their own support. Diana?
It might be out of your hands, Morgan, but that makes it the world's problem.
And within minutes, leaping off the roof of the United Nations building to land on the invisible wing of the robot plane is the red and gold form of Wonder Woman. As the magnificent solar-powered vehicle begins a dizzying climb into the stratosphere, racing the armed might of the world's greatest nations to disaster. And contains the explosions of the destruction-carrying tubes that soar up at the approaching ships until not one weapon is left. And on the lawn surrounding the Washington Monument in the capital city of the United States, the robot plane accompanies six magnificent ships to a soft landing. It is not long before a crowd of people gravitate to the lawn as Wonder Woman looks on. As if at a signal, when members of the news media arrive, six entry hatches to six spacecraft open. And
They're all women! And they got to be at least 7 feet tall!
7 feet tall and gorgeous!
Women and men of Earth, we come in peace. We call ourselves the Psi Women, and we reign supreme on the world of Regulus IV.
The news hits the world like a wave of rolling thunder, and within a week...
This is Patsy Keene for WRRB-TV. Thousands of women cheered Lyra, leader of the Psi Women, today when she spoke at Madison Square Garden. Lyra espoused the Psi Women's philosophy of the superiority of women to men in all ways, saying that if women ruled Earth, then their ships would never have been attacked out of mindless fear. They say that on their planet, men are slaves who walk on all fours, something hardly likely to happen here on Earth.
Sometime later in the skies above the city, Wonder Woman seeks out the leader of the Psi Women.
Psi Women's command ship directly ahead. Robot plane slow to rendezvous with ship and hover.
And Wonder Woman's plane soon makes contact with the alien craft.
Lyra! Lyra! Come out of the ship immediately. This is Wonder Woman and this is an order.
Come aboard, sister. Why do I detect anger in your voice?
You don't know? Don't you monitor Earth television? Haven't you seen what's been happening in the weeks your ships have been hovering over our world? Do you know what's happened to our men?
Your men have simply begun to take their proper place in your society. It is a gift from the enlightened civilization of Regulus IV.
A gift? Turn on that television monitor and look at this gift.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
Look at that, Lyra. The President down on his knees as he crawls to the podium behind his wife. Now look. He's sitting up on his hind legs as his wife addresses the press.
Ladies of the press, because of the effects the bizarre events of these past weeks have had on our economy, the President and I have decided...
I thought you were an Amazon, Wonder Woman, not a slave. I see you will no longer be welcome in our ships. You are dismissed.
Get that hand off me, or I'll take it home as a souvenir.
Don't do anything. Oh! Not even the women of my own world are permitted to lay a hand on Lyra. You will have to be corrected. Should have you killed, Wonder Woman. It is only your ignorance that keeps me from doing so.
I'll leave now, but if you continue to spread this noxious philosophy of yours, you can swear by Hera, I shall be back. You there in my plane, who are you? For Athena's sake, get up off your knees.
I can't get off my knees, Wonder Woman. This isn't natural, you see. It's a disease. I'm a Psi-Man from Regulus IV. Please take me away from here. If they know I even talk to you, they'll certainly torture me.
They didn't know the Psi women brought any of their men along, and I suspected this all fours business was some kind of disease of theirs. What's the story?
The story is a terrible one of sickness and pestilence. A horrible affliction that affects only men. An affliction the women of my world have brought to yours.
Don't be afraid. Tell me.
Generations ago, men were dominant on my world. Even more so than on Earth. Then the germ hit. Within weeks, all men were dropped to the posture of dogs. It fell to the women until a cure was found to take over the dominant role.
And there is a cure. What is it?
That's what is so horrible. When Regulus IV scientists found a cure, a vote was taken among the women and they decided to suppress it. We understand now that the women were downtrodden so long that they could not bring themselves to give up the world's rule. They decided to roam the galaxy for human-populated planets, bringing the disease germ with them. Earth is their first target, and the dozens of men who came along with them are kept hidden, serving only as servants like me.
Well, there's just a chance we can put an end to this injustice once and for all.
What are you doing? Landing on the water? The island is over there.
That's Paradise Island, where no man can set foot. But if you will cooperate, Amazon scientists will be able to use this plane as a floating medical laboratory while they analyze your blood and disease.
A cure? I would do anything for a cure.
Afternoon wears on to night, and night gives way to the rays of morning light as the finest medical minds the Amazon civilization has produced shuttle back and forth to the robot plane floating off the coast of Paradise Island until...
Well, what have you got, Penelope?
With Minerva's help, I think I've found a serum that should reverse the effects of the disease, but it would be a great risk without further testing.
With further testing, time would pass. I would be found and punished for leaving. Please, let me be the test case.
And just hours later, the time comes for Lyra and her sisters from Regulus IV to say farewell to the planet Earth from the lawn in front of the Washington Monument where they first appeared.
New rulers of the planet, we have left you our enlightened ways and a chance to remake your society according to a better order. We of Regulus IV bid you...
That noise! What is that disorder inside my ship?
We're free! We're free!
The Psymen, walking on 2 feet, rebelling. Stop them, sisters!
Peace. Let there be peace here.
Wonder Woman, our savior.
I might have known you would somehow be responsible for this travesty, renegade female.
Lyra, Psi women, Psi men, people of Earth. My Amazon sisters found a cure for the disease that makes men submissive to women. Because for women to come into their own that way would defeat the very meaning of sisterhood.
Boo!
Oh, forget it!
No!
We don't want that!
Listen to me. Let me speak. I saturated the atmosphere of the Earth with the disease cure in gaseous form using my robot plane. Because it is not dominance, one group over the other group, for which both women and men must strive, it doesn't matter which of us is toughest, we must all be given a chance to be equals.
Wonder Woman is right. We have a chance when we return to Regulus IV to go back as equals for the first time in our history. Men and women of all worlds are different, and for that reason, need each other desperately. Let us take this chance, and surely we will profit from it.
That goes here on Earth, too. Hooray for Wonder Woman!
Yay! 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 Get going!
Great Hera, make this dream come true.
KZSU, Stanford.
It's a summer day at Stewart's Bay, a small fishing village. David Banner stands at the end of a dock, breathing fresh sea air.
Morning.
Great day.
Let's hope it holds.
Going out?
Yeah, that's my baby, Bosun 3.
Nice boat.
You new around here?
Yes.
Working?
Not yet,
Good. Huh? My second mate's laid up in the hospital. Why don't you sign on for a couple of weeks?
I don't know very much about fishing.
You got muscle, you can haul a net, crank a winch.
Oh, sure, but I...
Okay, that's all that's needed. My name's Steve Jager.
David Benson.
Come aboard. This is my first mate.
Hi.
A pleasure, Ms...
Mrs., I'm Judy Jager. How do you want your eggs? Once over or sunny side?
Any way at all.
Once over and three for me. Come on, Dave, I'll show you around. We'll be drawing up our nets later on. This winch...
How's the fishing been on the whole?
Not too good. Between the foreign fleets and the pollution, I think Stewart's Bay has added.
But the new 200-mile limit should...
Don't believe everything you read, Dave. They're still coming in.
Well, that's poaching.
That's what they call it. The pollution's worse, though.
Plus a few other things.
What?
Stick around for a while. You'll find out. Those are the nets up ahead. Oh, my God.
The lines have been cut.
It's him again, Steve.
This is it, Judy. I'm going to beat his brains in.
What good would that do? Anyway, you might get your own beak in first. He's a lot bigger than you. What we need is proof, evidence, something to take him to court on.
What's this all about? Who cut your nets?
Jack Mayo.
Mayo?
We'll tell you all about it later. The catch is gone. Might as well head in.
Mayo was after me for years. Thought he was going to marry me. Fat chance. When I married Steve, Mayo started carrying the torch. It turned into a blazing fire.
You think he's responsible for the nets?
More than that. Poaching our catch, cutting across our lines when we trawl, sabotaging our engine at night.
But you can't prove it.
Not the sneaky stuff. And when he cuts over our lines, he laughs and says it was an accident. Look, it's Mayo. Watch it, Steve.
He's trying to swamp us.
Almost did it. Another few feet and we'd be over.
Likeable sort, isn't he? That his boat?
Yellowtail. Fastest sports fisherman in the harbor. He owns it with Freddie Fuller. Judy, this is it. I'm going to beat up on that guy.
Over my dead body, you will. You think I want a dead husband?
Later, at the dock.
Dave, you seen Steve?
No.
I can't find him anyplace. I just hope he didn't lose his head and go after Jack Mayo.
Where would he look for Mayo?
He hangs out at the sea shanty.
I'll check it out.
I'll repay.
Just a coat, please. Has Steve Jager been here?
Haven't seen him.
Who's looking for him?
I am.
Who's you?
The name's Benson. And you're Mayo.
He knows my name, Freddy.
I've seen him before.
Yeah. Ain't we seen you before?
Earlier today. I was aboard Bosun 3 when you tried to swamp us.
Listen to that, Freddy. Swamp him.
I don't think it's very funny, Mayo.
I do.
It was an accident, Benson.
Yeah, an accident.
Like the net mines.
What net lines?
You cut them.
Can you prove it?
No, but...
You looking to fight, mister?
Take it easy, Jack.
Yeah, why don't you cool it, Mayo? Lay off on Steve and Judy. They're just trying to make a living, just like you. You lost the girl, take it like a man.
You are looking for a fight, ain't you?
I told you no, I don't want to fight, and I don't lose my temper easily. I'm only trying...
I do! I lose my temper when somebody tells me what to do, how to live. Nobody minds my business but myself.
Cool it, will you, Jack? There's people in here.
Shut up! You get out of here, Benson. Do what he says, will you?
I can see I'm not welcome.
No, you ain't. And one more thing, Benson. If I ever see you again, I'll make sure your flag flies at half-mast.
Chief, figure out what's wrong with it.
More of Jack Mayo's work, if you ask me.
Well, the alarm was set last night.
He knows how to get around a ship's alarm.
Why don't we leave it for a while, Steve? I'm starved.
Okay. Want to join us at the diner, Dave?
Well, no, thanks. I'd like to monkey with the engine for a while. I think the timing's off.
Think you can fix it?
Well, I'm pretty good with mechanical things.
Okay, join us later.
Fine. Listen, can I take her out for a test run? It might also be the fuel line.
Can you cast off and dock her alone?
Sure.
Okay, you get your sea legs. Come on, Judy.
Sounds okay so far. Maybe it... What now? It's got to be the fuel line. It's got to be. Boat coming this way. Uh-oh. It's Mayo.
How you doing, bosun?
He almost swamped me. Mayo! He's coming back straight at me. Inches. You're trying to sink me, Mayo.
I told you, Benson, next time I see you, I'm gonna fly you at half mast.
Mayo, what are you doing?
Looks like Bosun's gonna need a new running light, Freddy.
How about that radar antenna?
Yeah, how about that?
Have you gone crazy, Mayo?
Hey, Freddy, maybe if I put some shots into the hull, she'll sink.
Boats with holes usually do.
You can't do this, Mayo. The Jaegers are good people. You can't destroy their boat.
I told you I'm gonna fly you in half mast. Hey, where is he?
I saw him dive into the water.
Maybe he'll drown, you know. Just an accident.
As the enraged David Banner dives into the sea and sinks into the blue-green depths, his features contort, change, take on the aspect of utter fury and rage. His muscles bulge, his chest expands, his sinews contract in a great effort, and he zooms to the surface like a great angry shark, exploding into the air in a burst of wrath and vengeance.
What the devil's that?
I don't know.
Let's get out of here.
Knifing through the water like some great monster from the deep, the raging giant swims toward Yellowtail.
Pull it! Get the shark rifle!
I can't find it!
Well, look under the forward hatch and hurry up! I don't know what this thing is, but we gotta kill it!
The screaming thing comes nearer, eyes full of fury, hate in its soul. The Hulk! Coming up from beneath Yellowtail's hull, the Hulk tears at the wood plank, rips the keel, and then hurls it into the air. Turning, the Hulk sinks into the sea, where in the silent depths he again becomes David Banner, man of no memory, unaware, unknowing of what he has done. Slowly, Banner rises to the surface and swims to the Bosun 3.
What did they say it was?
Some kind of sea monster. Imagine that. The Stewart's Bay monster, like Loch Ness, huh?
If you ask me, both Mayo and Fuller were seeing things.
Maybe, but they're both changed men. I can swear to that. Meek. I never saw two guys so meek. Maybe there is a monster out there.
There are monsters everywhere. Monsters of the soul.
Huh?
Nothing. Just a thought.
With the sudden fury of a thunderbolt, a flare is shot into the sky over Central City. Three awesome words take form as if by magic, and a legend is born.
Look, in the sky! What in blazes does it mean?
I don't know, but the crowds are getting panicky.
Rumors are flying about an alien invasion.
Above all the hubbub and excitement, one strange figure holds a still-smoking flare gun. One strange man who is somehow more than just a man, for he is the leader of the Fantastic Four.
It is the first time I have found it necessary to give the signal. I pray it will be the last.
Page two.
In another part of town, Susan Storm is having tea with a society friend when she hears the ominous words.
Susan, look! Those words in the sky, what do they mean? So it has happened at last. I must be true to my vow. There can be no turning back. It is time for the world to meet the invisible girl. Susan! She's gone! But where? How?
Hey, what's going on?
Something rushed past me. Something unseen.
Stand aside. I have no time to lose.
It's a ghost!
Just what I need, an empty cap.
Boy, what a dull day. I might as well cruise around until I pick me up a fare.
Thank you. I will get out here.
Okay.
Huh? Wait. Who said that? What?
Don't just sit there gaping, man. Take your money.
I'm hearing things. Seeing things. Or not seeing them. Gangway, I'm getting out of here.
It works. I really am invisible. Completely, totally invisible. There can be no doubt. Now all that remains is my mission.
But let us leave the amazing invisible girl and turn our attention to a men's clothing store in another part of town.
I'm sorry, mister. I just don't carry anything big enough to fit a man your size.
Ah, everywhere it is the same. I live in a world too small for me.
Look, out the window in the sky. Those words. The Fantastic Four. What can they mean?
So, the time has come.
Wait, don't bother taking off your coat. I told you we haven't anything in your size. Your size? Oh, no.
What a relief to get rid of those tight rags.
Page four.
Why must they build doorways so narrow? Holy smoke. A monster.
Hey, look. What's that?
I don't know, but I ain't taking any chances with it.
Halt! Halt or I'll shoot! Okay, I warned you!
His first shot missed because he was so nervous. But he'll not get another chance.
Did you see that? He ripped the manhole cover out of the ground with his bare hands!
It's impossible!
I have gone far enough. I should be under my destination by now. But there is no manhole above me. No opening. Bah! I cannot delay. I'll make an opening.
What is that? Right in front of me. Oh, no. It's alive!
Oh, did you not see me in time?
It's a walking nightmare. Help! Help!
Lily-livered cowards.
It ain't human. It's too big. Too strong. It's a Martian.
Minutes later, the police riot squad reaches the scene.
There's no one here.
Street's deserted.
And who put in that danger call?
I don't know how to explain it. But there's something weird happening in Central City. Those words in the sky, those scattered reports of monsters walking the streets.
But what does it add up to, Chief? What?
What does it add up to, indeed? Perhaps if the police officers could witness still another scene in a local service station, they would find yet another clue, as will we.
We got her purr and gentle as a lamb, Johnny.
Good, that's the way I like her. There's only one thing in the world that interests me more than cars.
Yeah, what's that, Johnny?
Page six.
Hey, Johnny, look. In the sky. Those words. They're all coming together. They're turning into a number. The number four. Johnny, that heat. Where's it coming from? What's happening to you?
Don't worry, pal.
You're turning into... Gasp. A human torch.
Remember me saying there was only one thing I care about more than cars? Well, this is it.
Impossible, incredible, call it what you will, but the figure which had been Johnny Storm scant seconds before is now a careening human torch, flashing through the skies above like a flaming meteor.
Look! A blazing, burning comet!
No! It's not a comet. It's...
Unless we're going mad, it's something human!
Seconds later, the mayor of Central City issues an emergency order.
Call the governor! Have him alert the National Guard! Move, man!
Yes, sir.
And before the hour is out, Washington has also taken immediate action.
Red Dog to Squadron Leader. Attack unknown flaming object over Central City.
Flaming object, huh? Someone must have flipped his lid. All the while, Goose Check... Hey, wait. What's that? It is a flaming, flying object. Let's get it, guys.
No, no, stay back. Keep away. Why won't they listen? I warned them. I tried not to burn their planes, but they came too close. At least they all parachuted to safety. Sound in the distance. It looks like a Hunter missile. It zeroed in on me. It's attracted to my flame. I can't escape it. It's too fast. It has a nuclear warhead. If it explodes, I'm a goner.
Page 8.
Suddenly, the human torch's flame begins to diminish. And as the missile is about to strike him, two impossibly long arms reach above the rooftops and...
Got it!
Moving with dazzling speed, one of the incredible arms hurls the mighty missile far from shore, where it explodes harmlessly over the sea. But as the flying boy's flame flickers out altogether, he begins to plummet toward Earth, toward a certain doom.
Grab me, young boy!
Who is this unbelievable stranger who has saved the human torch?
You're safe now, lad. You're safe.
In fact, who are all four of these strange and astonishing humans? How did they become what they are? What mystic quirk of fate brought them together to form the awe-inspiring group known as the Fantastic Four?
You all heeded my summons. Good. There is a task that awaits us. A fearful task.
But there is time enough to learn of the task which faces the Fantastic Four. First, let us discover more about their origin. Let us go back to that momentous day when an angry Ben Grimm confronted Dr. Reed Richards.
If you want to fly to the stars, then you pilot the ship. Count me out. You know we haven't done enough research into the effect of cosmic rays. They might kill us all out in space.
Then we've got to take that chance unless we want the commies to beat us to it. I never thought that you would be a coward.
A coward? Nobody calls me a coward. Get the ship. I'll fly her no matter what happens.
And so, led by a determined Dr. Reed Richards, the little group sped toward the spaceport on the outskirts of town.
Susan, Ben and I know what we're doing, but you and Johnny...
Don't say it, Reed. I'm your fiancé. Where you go, I go.
And I'm tagging along with Sis, so it's settled.
No time to wait for official clearance. Conditions are right tonight. Let's go.
Before the guard can stop them, the mighty ship which Reed Richards had spent years constructing is soaring into the heavens towards outer space.
She's behaving like a baby. Everything is perfect.
Yeah, except the cosmic rays. No one knows what they'll do.
Page 10.
Higher and higher, like a silver bullet, soars the sleek spacecraft.
We had to do it. We had to be the first.
But we're reaching the cosmic storm area. Hang on.
Crack, 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 crack!
Hear that? It's the cosmic rays. Oi, I warned you about them.
They're penetrating the ship. Our shielding isn't strong enough.
Then I don't feel anything.
Naturally. They're only rays of light. You can't feel them. But that'll hurt you just the same.
My head. It's pounding as though it's about to burst.
Ben was right.
We should have waited. Should have gotten heavy shielding.
Johnny, what is it? What's happening to you?
I don't know.
He says, my body feels hot.
Like it's on fire.
I feel like I'm burning up.
Listen to me. Somebody else take the controls.
I can't handle the ship anymore.
My arms are heavy. Too heavy. Can't move. Too heavy.
Got
to lie, bruh. Can't move.
At that moment, the powerful ship's automatic pilot took over and managed to return the sleek rocket safely to Earth in a rough but non-fatal landing.
I'm grateful we're all alive. It was mighty close.
But, Reed, we failed. After all your work, your dedication, we failed.
Bah! What did you expect?
But we're still not completely safe. We still have to see whether the cosmic rays affected us in any way.
Oh, Reed, I feel so strange.
Susan! Look at Susan!
What's wrong?
Your gasp fading away.
Oh, no. No!
It's impossible.
Somehow the cosmic rays have altered your atomic structure, making you grow invisible.
Sis, I can't see you at all anymore.
How long will it last?
There's no way of knowing.
What if she never gets visible again?
Look, I see her.
I'm myself again. It happened so suddenly, all by itself.
Page 12.
Thank heavens. You're all right, my darling.
All right, eh? How do you know, wise guy? How do you know she won't turn invisible again? How do you know what'll happen to the rest of us?
Ben, I'm sick and tired of your insults, of your complaining. I didn't purposely cause our flight to fail.
And I'm sick of you, period. In fact, I'm going to paste you right in that smug face of yours.
Then stop. Wait. Look what's happening to you. You're changing.
Don't try to talk your way out of it, mister. I'm going to mop up the place with you.
Run, Reed, darling. He's turning into a some sort of a thing. He's stronger than ox.
Reed, darling. Bah! How can you care for that weakling when I'm here? I'll prove to you that you love the wrong man, Susan. Hey, what?
No, you don't. You've had this coming to you for a long time, Ben.
Oh, Reed. Reed, not you, too. Not you, too.
What am I doing? What happened to me? To all of us?
You've turned into monsters, both of you. It's those rays. Those terrible cosmic rays. Now I know why I've been feeling so warm. Look at me. They've affected me, too. When I get excited, I can feel my body begin to blaze. I'm lighter than air. I can fly. Look, I can fly.
Minutes later, Johnny Storm's flames subsided, and he landed near the other three. Silently, they watched the small fire he had started in the underbrush burn itself out. Silently, they were each occupied with their own startling thoughts.
We've changed. All of us. We're more than just human.
Listen to me, all of you. That means you too, Ben. Together we have more power than any humans have ever possessed.
You don't have to make a speech, Big Shot. We understand. We gotta use that power to help mankind, right?
Right, Ben, right.
I'm calling myself the Human Torch, and I'm with you all the way.
Same goes for me, the Invisible Girl.
There's only one still missing. Ben.
I ain't Ben anymore. I'm what Susan called me. The Thing.
And I'll call myself Mr. Fantastic.
And so was born the Fantastic Four. And from that moment on, the world would never again be the same.
It's too bad you guys in Houston didn't come along for the ride. I've got this sensational view of Earth where I'm standing. And as I look at the next bridge, I'm golf ball over it in this gravity. Anybody want to give me a hug?
That was an excerpt from astronaut Steve Austin's famous transmission to Earth during his historic walk on the moon several years ago. It was the voice of a courageous explorer, a man dedicated to the pursuit of man's knowledge and the expansion of his horizons. And it was for those very reasons that Steve Austin was piloting the experimental aircraft that exploded so devastatingly on the Nevada salt flats today, leaving Colonel Steve Austin a broken shell of a man, so badly injured his doctors say he won't be alive in the morning. Let us all say a silent prayer for Colonel Austin tonight, a true American hero, a man history will never forget.
You know, there's a very strong chance Austin won't be alive in the morning, Oscar.
It's your job to make those other doctors liars, Rudy.
We're in a top-security government medical center, where high-ranking Oscar Goldman and top scientist Rudy Wells have been listening to one of the many broadcasts devoted to Steve Austin's tragedy.
Is your team all set to go?
They're scrubbing now. The plastics are already in the operating room, along with the microcircuitry and the other hardware. Oscar, we've had the technology to do this for some time now. Every scientific variable has been computed and taken into account, except for one thing.
The human factor.
Right. We still don't know the extent of the psychological effects this operation will have on a human being, assuming the patient even survives.
But if he does, Rudy, we'll be witnessing one of the scientific achievements of the century, the birth of the world's first bionic man.
For 14 hours, Rudy Wells and his team of highly trained specialists painstakingly labor over the battered and broken body of Colonel Steve Austin, implementing scientific principles and technological procedures never before tested on a human being. And overseeing each and every phase of the incredibly intricate operation is a vigilant Oscar Goldman, silently spectating from the observation room. It is not until 7 days later that Steve Austin opens his eyes to groggily wonder where he is, without the slightest inkling that one of the eyes he just opened is not his own.
Am I dreaming, or is everyone in heaven as beautiful as you?
You're not dreaming, and you're not in heaven, Colonel, but thanks for the compliment. Now, take your medication. There you are.
Thank you, nurse. Could you leave us alone now?
Who are you?
My name's Oscar Goldman, and this is Dr. Rudy Wells. He headed the surgical team that worked on you.
Colonel Austin?
I don't know how you guys managed it, but thanks for pulling me through. I was sure I was a goner on the way down.
How do you feel?
A little dragged out and groggy, but otherwise, great. Like I've never been better.
That's exactly right, Colonel Austin. You never have been better. You're better now than you ever were before.
What's that supposed to mean?
In saving your life, Colonel Austin, we had to make some adjustments in your physical makeup.
Adjustments?
Improvements would be a better word. You're now faster, stronger, more durable than you ever were.
Take a look at your right hand.
It's my hand. So what?
Move the fingers.
I don't get it. I see the fingers moving, but it doesn't feel like I'm moving them.
You are and you're not. The nerve impulses from your brain are being relayed via microcircuitry and mini transistors.
Wait a minute. It's not just my fingers. My whole arm feels this way. Just what did you guys do to me?
We saved your life the only way possible. A way that only became possible this year, thanks to recent breakthroughs in technology.
What sort of technology?
Bionics, Colonel Austin. We have used advanced scientific techniques to duplicate what your own flesh and blood used to do.
Used to do?
Your injuries were extremely grave, Colonel. You lost your right arm and both your legs, along with your left eye.
You mean this arm I've got now?
It's bionic, as are your legs and your eye.
We don't expect you to adjust to this all at once. After all...
I don't want any part of any of it. You should have let me die in that plane. I'm getting out of here.
No, Austin, you must stay in your bed.
Out of my way.
You mustn't. Your bionic legs aren't ready yet.
But like an enraged wild animal, Steve Austin leaps from his bed, his bionic arm knocking Oscar and Rudy aside like they were no more than rag dolls.
Don't be a fool, Austin. Rudy!
As Oscar Goldman rushes to a stunned Rudy's side, a bionic wild man begins to charge through the hospital corridor.
It's Colonel Austin!
He must be stopped. Where are the orderlies?
There they are.
This will stop him.
Mr. Goldman, you've got the tranquilizer gun.
Rudy said compressed air charge will put him to sleep in seconds.
The bionic man feels the drugged air blast against his neck, whirls angrily to face his attacker, and then...
I didn't think we'd ever stop him. You dosed him just in time, Mr. Goldman.
If you ask me, all the government's got so far for their $6 million is an uncontrollable wild man.
It is another 24 hours before Steve Austin opens his eyes again to see Oscar Goldman again standing at his bedside.
How do you feel?
After yesterday, how come I'm not strapped to my bed?
You lost control of yourself, that's all. It was understandable under the circumstances. Besides, I don't think we could find a strap your bionic arm couldn't break through.
I know. I'm stronger, faster, better, right? But you left out one thing. I'm not a man anymore. I'm a freak.
I'm not going to debate the issue with you, Colonel. There's someone on the floor who's been begging to meet you. He's a general's son, and he's been paralyzed from the waist down. I'm afraid not even bionics can repair the damage to his spinal cord.
At that moment, the door opens, and a 10-year-old boy, strapped to a wheelchair, rolls himself in.
It's all right, Bobby. Come in. Bobby, this is Steve Austin. Colonel, this is little Bobby Phillips.
Steve Austin! Oh, wow! You don't know what a thrill it is to meet you.
I'll leave you two alone now.
I've been your biggest fan, Colonel Austin, ever since that day I watched you walk on the moon on TV. Boy, that was some crash you were in last week. But Mr. Goldman says you'll be okay.
That's what he tells me.
Anyway, I was in an accident, too, but I wasn't as lucky as you. Still, if one of us had to end up stuck in a wheelchair, I'm glad it was me. I'm just a little kid. I'm not nearly as important as an astronaut.
You really believe that, don't you?
Well, I've got to be going now. I'll be back later to get your autograph, if that's okay.
The crippled youngster wheels himself out, leaving an ashamed Steve Austin alone with his thoughts and his self-pity. The next morning, as Oscar and Rudy walk along the corridor of the hospital's top-secret bionic wing...
So the kid did get to see him yesterday.
Yes, but we still don't know what effect, if any, the... That sound. What is it?
It seems to be coming from the therapy room. That sounds like a treadmill.
And as they fling open the door to the well-equipped therapeutic gym...
Look at the speedometer. He's running over 60 miles per hour and still accelerating.
Incredible. The bionic legs are functioning perfectly.
Rudy, I think Colonel Austin just may have decided being bionic might be worth a try after all.
And several days later, a pleased Oscar Goldman records an impressive progress report into his personal diary.
And it turned out that the session with a little boy snapped Austin out of his self-pity and back to his senses. We immediately began running tests on him, and found to our amazement his bionic strength was powerful enough to lift entire cars. His bionic legs were mighty enough to enable him to jump a full 30 feet in the air. His bionic eye was telescopic enough to read the lettering on a postage stamp from 100 yards away. Everyone on the project agrees. Our $6 million man was worth every penny he cost. But I can't help wondering what Steve Austin would say if he ever found out that Bobby Phillips could walk as well as any other boy. Because he was an actor I hired to play on Steve Austin's sympathy and common sense. It was a dirty trick, I admit, but sometimes in a crisis... End of tape for now. Signing off. Come in. Come in, Steve. You should be very proud of yourself. Your test performances have far exceeded our expectations.
That's just what I wanted to talk about, Oscar.
Oh?
I wasn't an astronaut and a test pilot for nothing. I've been around long enough to know the government doesn't invest $6 million into a man without expecting something in return.
I can't fault your logic, Colonel.
I didn't think you would. I owe you a few, don't I?
Let's just say there'll be occasional jobs we'd like you to do for us. In fact, I could brief you on your first assignment right now. What do you say, pal?
Steve Austin, reporting for duty, pal.
One day, Popeye was looking at a book a friend had given him.
Oh, The Art of Skin Diving. Hey, they write books about everything. You read this book and you are an expert skin diver. It says here, well, blow me down. All you need is a suit of long underwear, socks, snorkel, fins, gloves, mask, pump, tank, raft, iron, spear, gum, knife, bag, bolt, oars, iron horn, ocean, and, oh yeah, something to dive down after, like sunken treasure.
Sailing, sailing, over the bounding main, for many a stormy wind shall blow ere Jack comes home again. Sailing, sailing, over the bounding main, for many a stormy wind shall blow ere Jack comes home again.
Now I got me equipment. All I got to do is to find the spot. On the map, it says X marks the spot. How can I find X, what's wrote on top of water? Well, blow me down. There it is. X marks the spot. Yep, this is the place where I dive in. Here goes nothing.
As Popeye started his search on the ocean bottom, he didn't know his old enemy Brutus had followed him with a copy of the same map.
X marks the spot. Yep, this is the place. Here I go.
I bet old Brutus wishes he was down here with me instead of staying at home. Hey, what was them directions? 16 paces from old wreck to treasure. But beware of giant clams and octopus. Well, blow me down. There's the wreck. Now I start me counting. 1, 2, 3, 4. Ow! Hey, let go. Let go me leg. A giant clam's got me leg. Ouch! Let go, clam. Hey, now something's pulling me other leg. It's an octopussy. And she's pulling me out of the clam. Hiya, pussy.
How are you, Popeye?
Oh, she likes me. Oh, me own octopussy. Shake a tentacle, pal. Well, I gotta get going now. But I'll be seeing you, Octi.
Bye-bye, Popeye.
5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11.
As Popeye walked away, the octopus turned in the other direction and almost bumped into Brutus.
1 side, cuckoo puss. I'm looking for gold.
Ooh, you kicked me.
And I'll give you more if you don't get out of my way. There's Popeye now, and he's getting near the treasure.
12, 13, 14, 15, 16. Ouch! I banged me knee on this hole. Hey, it's the treasure. Blow me down. Look at them beautiful pieces of gold.
Brutus saw he was too late, but he wouldn't give up that easy.
I'm going back to the boat. And now I'm going to drop this anchor right down on Popeye's head. There it goes. I got him. Now to go down and get the treasure. And here it is. La-dee-la-da-do. Money riches, gold. No dee doo 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 doo. And now up to the boat with the treasure. Oops-a-daisy.
Back on the ocean bottom, a beautiful mermaid revives the unconscious Popeye.
Hey, what's the idea? Brrr. Well, blow me down. You looks just like me girl, Olive Oil. Holy, you're a mermaid type.
Oh, Popeye, here. Let me help you. We'll go up on that rock in the sunshine so you can dry up and I'll sing to you.
Oh, this is nice.
My bunny lies over the ocean. My bunny lies over the sea. Bring back my body to me.
When Brutus saw Popeye and the mermaid on the rock, he was furious. He slipped into the water, came up behind Popeye, and...
That takes care of you, Popeye. Now for the mermaid. Come here, little fishy. Right, gotcha.
Help!
Meanwhile, the octopus pulled her friend Popeye up on the rock and gave him artificial respiration.
Oh, where am I?
Hey,
Oh, I'll save you. It's that Brutus again. Take that.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, save me.
I'll save you, dearie. Hey, what the? That crazy cuckoo puss got me by the feet. I'll tie you up in knots. There. That'll fix you, you cuckoo puss.
Wish I had me spinach. I think I'll try some of this sea spinach. That does it. Now I'm coming after you, Buster.
Ouch!
Your turn, Octopussy.
Okay, Popeye.
And here's another one.
Ouch!
Oh, look, Popeye. Octopussy had Brutus in one of her arms, and she's swinging him round and round and round.
And there he goes.
Help!
My Brutus flies over the ocean. My Brutus flies over the sea. Don't bring back my Brutus to me.
You can say that again.
Oh, Popeye, you are wonderful.
And you can say that again.
Popeye the Sailor Man eats his spinach by the can.
No man alive is stronger than Popeye the Sailor Man.
Popeye the Sailor Man.
Farts have amazing powers. I can fart so hard that I can fly through the air. I can gas evildoers and knock them unconscious. Or I can light my farts and turn them into a devastating wall of flame. I'd be a great superhero if I did those things. But I don't. I work in an office, and I don't let anybody know about my fart powers. Would you?
Good morning.
Fart man. Oh, Christ. It's the most embarrassing thing in the world.
Returns control of your radio device to you until next week.
I'm Popeye the Sailor Man. I'm strong to the finish, cause I eat the spinach. I'm Popeye the Sailor Man.
He's Popeye the Sailor Man. He's Popeye the Sailor Man. He's strong to the finish, cause he eats the spinach. He's Popeye the Sailor Man.
I'm one tough gazookas that hates all palookas that ain't on the up and square. I biff some and box some and always out rocks some and none of them gets nowhere.
If anyone passes to whisk, it's poppin', it's wham, understand?
So keep good behavior, that's your one lifesaver with Popeye the Sailor Man.
He's Popeye the Sailor Man. He's Popeye the Sailor Man.
Popeye the Sailor Man. He's walking the beach, 'cause he is his